It is 4 p.m. here on KZSU 90.1 FM, which means it is time for my show, Hi Kifak Sava, the weekly show that comes to you every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. and which attempts to bring you songs and music from Lebanon, centered on Lebanon, but also on the region. And today we have a very, very special show because I am showcasing the ultra-hip Lebanese band, Mashrou' Layla, the Layla Project. You might have heard about them. We've played them here on KZSU. In fact, last spring, their album topped the chart for most airplay on the world charts here on KZSU 90.1 FM. I'm delighted to be with you. My name is DJ Ramsey. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. You are listening to the 90.1 FM KZSU, of course. We are streaming live at kzsulive.stanford.edu. The show is Hi Kifak Sava, and the showcased band of the day is Mashrou' Layla.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the Lebanese band Mashrou' Layla, and Mashrou' Layla, translated as the Layla Project, have been around for a few years now. They are an alternative Lebanese music band, and they are just simply fantastic because of the way they experiment with different musical genres. Their lyrics are in Arabic, but their musical genre is very hard to define, as you could hear from that track called Raqsat Layla, translated as Layla's Dance. The music is sort of sounds like a mix between what gypsy music and Arabic music and Western beats, and it's all sort of brought into one. That was Mashrou' Layla, a group of students who got together from the American University in Beirut and got together to create music on a well-destined day, and ended up creating a wonderful album called Mashrou' Layla. That's their self-titled album. That album did really well and got quite a bit of good reviews all around the Middle East, and eventually made it here to KZSU 90.1 FM here at Stanford, where they got heavy airplay, I guess, in the spring. Their album did really well. They do have a second album out called El Hal Romansi, which was just released this summer. And so today I thought we would showcase a little bit the band, their music, and also bring you two exclusive interviews with the band's members, two of the band's members. They are Hamid Sinno, who is the vocalist, whose voice you just heard on the track Raqsat Layla, and also the young lady who plays keyboards, a delightful young lady whose name is Umayya Malaib, or Malaib, and she is just a delightful person who I got the chance to interview as well this summer while I was in Beirut, Lebanon. We were sitting by the Mediterranean, and we were sort of lounging and enjoying the breeze. You'll be able to even hear the Mediterranean waves and the crashing in the distance. And as we sat there and spoke to both of them individually, I was able to get quite a bit of information and background information, I guess, on the band, the name, the music, their plans to tour. At the time, I believe they were about to tour Serbia. And I guess by now they've done that, but you'll be hearing some allusions to that in the interviews that I'm about to play. So I hope you'll join me for the next 2 hours for this kind of music that's fun and deep and different all at the same time, all in Arabic. The show is Hi Kifak Sava. And I guess the DJ, which would be me, is DJ Ramsey. I'm with you every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. And before we go on to one of the interviews I just promised, I did want to say that today is a very special day for many people here in the... tonight is a very special night for the Muslim community here in the U.S. and all over the world, because today or tomorrow, depending what time zone you're in, but it is what's called Eid al-Adha, and for that occasion, I do have with me in the studio Ahmed Q, who wanted to kind of wish his friends and family back home in Jordan and I guess elsewhere a very happy Eid al-Adha, a blessed Eid al-Adha. Ahmed, welcome to KZSU.
Hi.
And this is a very special, momentous day today for many people in the Muslim countries, in Islamic countries, and as well as the Muslim community here in the States.
Well, actually, thank you, first of all, for hosting me. The Eid al-Adha is going to be... next week, but the people started celebrating from today.
I see.
And they started sending me greetings and wishes, and I wish if I'm with them right now to say hi and congrats for this Adha Eid, but I'm distant now and I cannot do that.
Can do it through the miracle of the internet streaming, because the show is streaming live at kzsulive.stanford.edu, and hopefully some of your family and friends back home in Jordan are listening to you as we speak.
Well, not only for them, I'm saying Eid Adha Mubarak for all the listeners all around the world, and I wish you all to... to live next week and enjoy the Adha Eid and celebrate with your families and friends and sacrifice, but don't eat too much. Just spread the meat and enjoy.
Yeah, because it's funny you brought up the word sacrifice, because that is really at the root of the word Adha.
Exactly.
And can you explain a little bit maybe to our American listeners who may not be familiar with this Eid, why it's so significant in Islam?
Well, during this Eid, the people buy the sheeps, buy the goats, cows, camels, anything, and they slay them and they distribute the meat to the poor people, orphans, and anyone who is needy.
And the significance is, so symbolically this is done to kind of remind everybody to...
that there are some poor people who need to eat.
Absolutely. And so Eid al-Adha shouldn't be mistaken with Ramadan, correct?
No.
Yeah, because that's a different thing.
Yeah.
And certainly I can tell you that what my Facebook page is filled with Eid al-Adha images today. And so, you know, I thought you would come in, Ahmed Q from Jordan. And this is your first Adha outside of the U.S., I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of Jordan,
Yeah, it's my first time celebrating the Eid in the U.S.
Is it a little bit of a contrast, you know, not being in an Islamic country?
I didn't see anyone who's celebrating right here, not now.
So if we were in Jordan right now, what would be going on because of...
fireworks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, noises everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, I guess, you know, you could Google something. I don't know. I'm feeling really bad here that I'm not able to, you know, provide you with a proper Eid al-Adha, but thank you for being with us and for wishing everybody. And I'm going to segue in a moment to the promised interview with Mashrua Layla Band member Hamid Sinno, who's the lead vocalist. But before I do, and since I have Ahmed Q right here in the studio, I thought I would ask him, as a typical, I guess, Jordanian young man, have you heard of Mashrua Layla?
Well, of course.
And what have you heard about them?
Well, I heard about them and I heard them.
Oh.
I attended their concert in Lebanon.
Did you?
Yeah, I did during the summer.
Wow, and how was that?
It was perfect.
Really?
Yeah, it's so different than the listening to the CD. It's so much better when you hear them live.
Really? Because most people say, you know, people sound good on the CD, but when you hear them live, they're not
actually,
as good.
No, actually, these young people are very talented.
Really?
They dance, they go up and down. I mean... They're really happy.
Oh, great. Because I guess you saw them this summer, Ahmed, and I was in Beirut, Lebanon myself this summer, and I got the chance to interview the band's lead vocalist. His name is Hamid Sinno, and he is a very interesting individual. So I was going to feature the interview. I hope you'll stick around, Ahmed, to listen to this exclusive interview we're bringing here on the High Kifak Sava show on KZSU 90.1 FM. Okay, so shukran ya Ahmed, and we'll move from Ahmed to a little bit of an intro about Hamid Sinno. Hamid Sinno is the lead vocalist for the group, the Lebanese group Mashrua Layla, and he is one of several band members. They also include a young lady named Ia Malaib on keyboard. You have other instruments played also by Ibrahim Bad, Wakarl Jirjis, and Andre Shadid, and Firas Abu Fakhir. Not to forget Hayek Papazian, whose violin actually really rocks. And I think when you listen to some of the tracks we'll be featuring by the group later on in the show, you'll understand why I'm so excited about showcasing this amazing Lebanese band. So before I go on to my promised interview, just a quick word here. Do you have questions about 3-day notices, 30-day notices, unlawful detainers, security deposits, repairs, habitability, lockouts, or rental agreements? Do you have other concerns about your housing rights? If you live in San Jose, call the Legal Aid Society of Santa Clara County at 408-283-1540 for free legal assistance. That's the Legal Aid Society of Santa Clara County at 408 1 208-283-1540. I'll say the number once again, 408-283-1540. Well, I think I've kept you waiting long enough here. I think we should segue right to the promised interview with the Mashrua Layla lead vocalist singer Hamid Sinno, a very interesting young man who I got to meet and know this summer in Beirut, Lebanon, while I was there. And he spoke to me very candidly about his participation in the band, how the band was formed, his views of, well, everything from issues relating to music to issues relating to marginalized sexualities in Lebanon. So we'll listen to Hamid Sinno's interview, which was conducted, as I said, by the Mediterranean. So if you listen to this interview and hear waves crashing in the background, these are indeed Mediterranean waves, as the interview was recorded in Beirut, Lebanon, right by the Mediterranean Sea. Here's Hamid Sinno and yours truly conducting this very sort of laid-back interview back in the summer of 2011. KZSU 90.1 Stanford. I'm sitting here with Hamid Sinno from the group band slash project Mashrua Layla, whose music has been playing on KZSU for the past year, whose album has topped the charts, the world charts here at KZSU for most airplay. And Mr. Hamid Sinno has kindly agreed to sort of a uncomfortable or comfortable interview with our listeners. And we're sitting here by the Mediterranean as Hamid attempts to make sense of this interview. Hamid, welcome to KZSU 90.1 FM, Stanford University.
Hi, KZSU.
So were you aware that you have mass appeal on college radio?
No, I was not before.
This is the first time you actually find out.
Yeah.
Is this because you're not looking at sales, promotions, you're just
I mean, yeah, it's not like that's... I don't really take care of that part of everything.
Who does?
Andre most of the time deals with stuff related to management, and Brahim looks at statistics online of where we're getting play and where we're not.
And you're more concerned with the writing?
Yeah.
Singing. So I think we should just begin very briefly with the beginning.
All right.
Project of One Night, mm-hmm. Layla's project. This is not a band. This is a project. You don't like to be called a band.
No, I mean, we're a lot more comfortable with being called a band now. It's just when we started, it was our intention was to begin a workshop where people would walk in and out and just play whatever they wanted. And just have a space to make music whenever they needed to, with no pressure, no final product that was required. And then at some point we decided that the seven of us would make a band out of it.
And by us, you mean these?
I mean the current members of the band.
And
our bassist changed a couple of times, but apart from that, it's...
And you were all students at the American University in Beirut, the AUB.
Mm-hmm. Most of us were in the same department as well. We're all studying architecture or graphic design. Actually, they're all studying architecture. I'm the only designer in the band. So we're all in the same building, and we just wanted to make music. And
as a type of workshop?
Yep.
You never imagined that it would become...
No, none of us had any idea. No one had any idea when we started. Most of us still struggle with, I guess, trying to understand the gravity of what's been happening and people's reactions and... So all the positivity we've been getting, it's extremely rewarding. But yeah, we started with just the intention of making music. And
so you were a student at the AUB.
Yeah.
And you were a graphic design major. And somebody said, come to this workshop, and we're going to sort of jam and see what happens. And you went and met these people for the first time. Or
exactly. I mean, we had met before, but none of us were friends. Some of us harbored certain antagonisms, I guess, towards each other, but yeah, it was, we, I guess, came together over the workshop.
And the band's name was born out of that day.
Yep.
When did you realize that this could be more than a one-night gig?
I think it was around the first time we played Fête de la Musique in Beirut. It's a street festival where bands from all around the country come and play on different stages around the city, depending on the genre that they're playing. And the audience reaction was phenomenal. I think we all felt a bit more pressure then. And
you remember that night?
Yeah, of course.
And you remember thinking, this is something that I could do
for the rest of my life, yeah.
For the rest of your life?
Totally.
Do you picture yourself doing it for the rest of your life?
I mean, I hope so. I'm not sure I'll necessarily be successful, but yeah, I'd love to be. I mean, there's nothing I love more in the world.
And so then the next step came when you decided to put together a CD of the song.
Well, I mean, we registered for this competition, and then what we won was supposedly a CD deal, but that didn't end up happening because we had a bit of a problem with the rest of the terms in the competition, so we just got other producers at that point, and we produced the first album.
What year was that?
2009.
And so I know in Lebanon, when you mention Mashrou' Layla, people have an idea. Is that the same all over the Arab world, or has it skipped the Arab world and gone into the West?
No, I mean, it's been beautiful in the rest of the region, particularly in Cairo. We just played a few concerts there, and the amount of support we got was incredible, and people were so positive, and we showed up, and everyone knew our lyrics and was singing along. It's a completely surreal experience. But yeah, so we've had a lot of support in Cairo. From what I hear, there's a lot of support in Amman as well. I don't know much about Damascus apart from there being a few fans that actually drove into Beirut for a bunch of our concerts here. And we've had a really great online following from Palestine that we unfortunately can't pursue because of the legal setup with the border crossings. And
so you've never performed there?
In Palestine?
Yeah.
No, but we'd all, you know.
Would you like to?
Yeah, I'd give up an arm, I guess, or something.
Nice. And what about college radios? I know in the States your music's been being picked up by college radio. It seems to immediately appeal to college kids in that radical stage of, you know, networking and grassroots movements. Are you aware of that? And
no.
How much of that is something that appeals to you?
I mean, I think it's incredible that that's what's happening. And sort of funny, because at the time we were writing the first album, particularly the lyrics, I think we were all going through that phase where we were starting to look at our politics and our ideology of choice, I guess. So I think it's great that that's translating, you know, internationally into audiences with similar backgrounds or phases. I don't know, but no, I didn't know. I mean, I knew we were playing on your radio show.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've been playing on UCSF and
UCLA
stations. I mean, they've been spinning that it's on the playlist. It's
amazing. I knew we were on NPR as well, actually. But
NPR,
apart from that,
yes. So it starts with Freedom Radio and Free Speech Radio, but college radio seems to be the niche here. Do you feel like a college sort of tour would be appropriate at this
I mean, we'd love to do it, but again, we're seven people, which makes it very hard to fund everything. And we don't like playing unless it's, you know, the seven of us together. Also, I mean, I'm not sure how big of an audience we'd be able to pull out into a concert in the States. We'd all love to play there, but how feasible it is questionable, I guess.
And so the first album, which is self-titled, was released. It's actually on iTunes now, finally. Thank you for listening to the mass emails that were sent to you.
We had been meaning to put it online, actually, from the day the album was launched in Beirut, which was before it was even selling in the region or anything. And there were people that were supposed to be taking care of that that didn't end up doing it. But we figured out quite recently that it's not that difficult to do, and we just did it ourselves. And
so the album's out there, and I think the songs that appealed most, at least to American listeners, American audiences, has been, obviously what they call the Betenjan song, which
yeah.
And the second one is Fasatin, which I think the video was playing in the cafeteria at Stanford every 10-15 minutes as part of the rotation of, you know, you were between somewhere between Lady Gaga and local Stanford band. How much of the videos are you involved in, and how much does the video inform the song, or vice versa?
Well, I mean, I guess what we've been trying to do with both of the videos, our approach with the stuff that we're trying to get produced now is a bit different. But what we were doing at the beginning was sort of just letting the people that we agreed to work with to do whatever they wanted. I mean, there's nothing more annoying than being in a creative field and having to deal with a client who's constantly reworking the brief so that it fits them and not your interests or whatever. So we sort of just let the people do whatever they wanted. Obviously, we were there to help when questions were asked or when we had a good idea that we thought they could make use of. But otherwise, it was the production studios that are completely responsible for the outcomes.
Because the video for the first song was visually
Ras Layla,
the Batinjan song, right? The X-Plant song, they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Ras Layla.
Ras Layla. That video was stunning. I mean, visually interesting,
well.
And that made people more interested in the song because the genre that you're kind of producing is not your typical classical Arabic genre,
yeah.
Nor is it not anti-Arabic. The second video, though, I felt was very challenging and very empowering, and I think the fact that I saw it play so many times around the Stanford campus, around the UC Berkeley campus, makes me have to ask you about the deliberate nature of sort of gender identity in that.
Well, I mean, it only really comes up when Carl is in a dress, our drummer, which is the production studio's idea.
And he's oddly tantalizing in the dress.
Yeah, he's a very attractive person, but I mean, there was no, I guess, overt intention at the beginning to mess with gender. And I have these intentions in general with the way I live my daily life, but with the video in particular, again, like I told you, it was mostly the production house's ideas. And I guess the part with Carl in the dress was there mostly for theatrical gravity, I guess.
Can you just tell us from your point of view what the video is about? I mean, how do you see it? Because obviously the director's intention is not that important if it's not coming through, and each person's going to have their intention. What is your view? What is your take when you see it? What do you see?
I think one of the strong points of the video actually was, in general, the approach was very different from that of Ras Layla. Like, it was really supposed to be an illustrative video clip for a song where the logic wasn't very far from the logic of other popular culture video clips that you could find on regional cable. But basically, I think what they were trying to do was you know, go on tangents from the lyrics, and the lyrics of the song are about, you know, marriage and weddings and dresses and blah, 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 and they just went on tangents from there and tried to create things that they found visually pleasing without being too illustrative of the narrative that's already involved in the text of the song. So yeah, I think that was their point, but...
So I'm a little bit surprised that you're not as involved in the video.
I mean, we're a lot more involved with the stuff we're doing now. We're being a lot more picky about it. But no, like I told you, it's sort of, it's not, you know, Haig out of all of us is the most suitable to discuss film professionally and to actually have a well-rounded opinion. With the rest of us, I mean, we're more than aware of our shortcomings, and it's really annoying when you have to deal with a client who acts like they sort of know what they're talking about, and they just haven't been to film school. They really, really, really don't know.
So you concentrate on the lead vocals,
yeah.
Mostly. You play any instruments?
I mean, I play a bit of guitar, but I don't do it well, and I would not do it publicly.
Did you picture yourself being a vocalist for...
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted it since I was a little boy.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah? When did you discover your... I mean, did you have experience sort of singing? When did you discover...
Not really. I mean, I've always... Like, I've been singing since I was a little boy, but... I don't know. I think I... started wanting to become a singer after I saw Tina Turner.
Really?
On television, yeah.
Wow.
That was also when I learned what the word sexy meant for the first time. My father called her sexy, and then I asked what it meant.
Wow.
Anyway, besides the point.
No, I think that is the point I'm trying to ask, is where what influenced your...
I mean, when I was a kid, really, it's just always been there. It's always been something I've wanted to do. I'm obsessed with sound in general, and the voice, I think, is such an incredible tool. I mean, I wish I knew how to, you know, use it better. I have no formal training. I've never had access to that. I had, I think, 3 month access to choir, to some theory when I was in Berlin in high school, but that was it.
Which surprises me, because I think one of the things about the Mashrou Leila track, at least Shimmel Yasmini, is the powerful vocal performance.
Thanks.
That
well,
you
I mean,
give on
because
that.
With that song in particular, it wasn't something that we had. The way it was produced was completely different. I had, you know, been in the pits and I wrote it at home alone, and then I took it to the band, which is not the way things normally work. Normally we just get into a room, everyone starts playing something until we find something we like, and then I write lyrics over it, or the other way around. Shimmel Yasmin was something, I mean, the music is so basic, it's on loop, because like I told you, I can't really play guitar, and I, you know, where I was at that point, I just needed to sing. So I wrote something in my house, and then I took it to the room, and the guys, I mean, I think Brahim's solo, the bass solo on that is... It makes me cry every time.
Thank you.
That was a song called Shim El Yasmini, Smell the Jasmine, taken from the Lebanese band's Mashrua Leila's album, their first album, their first CD. And that CD sort of created quite a stir in mixing musical genres. They're a Lebanese group named Mashrua Leila, translated, it's the Leila Project. Their lead singer, whose vocals you just heard on this very, very heartfelt song, his name is Hamid Sinno. And part of what I'm doing on today's show, my show here called Haiki Faksava, is to showcase and present for the first time an interview with Hamid Sinno, an exclusive interview I've had with him for our listeners here at KZSU. The album Mashrua Leila, their premier album, their debut album, sort of got a lot of airplay here on the world music genre, and topped the world charts for most airplay back a few months ago. And over the summer, I was able to travel to Beirut, Lebanon, where I got to see the group Mashrua Leila perform in concert, and it was quite an experience. It was amazing, and I got to sit down with two of the band's members, and they were Hamid Sinno, whose interview we're listening to, and to Omeya Malaib also, who plays keyboards, who's a wonderful, wonderful, amazing young lady who sort of has made a career in music while maintaining another career all of its own. An interview with her will follow later in the show. And we will continue with the second part of my interview with lead vocalist Hamid Sinno in a little while, but first I wanted to remind everybody that you're listening to KZSU 90.1 FM. We come to you I come to you every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to bring you music that centers on Lebanon. And if you're wondering what the show's title is all about, well, it's the trilingual greeting in which many Lebanese people greet each other. And it's in Arabic, English, and French. Well, not in that order. Hi is, of course, English. And Kifak is the Lebanese colloquial way of saying, how are you? Sava is the French way of saying, hope it's going well. And so you put them all together and you get Hi Kifak Sava, the title of my show, which attempts to bring you songs that intersect and get dissected on the show in a way to show the commonality of some genres across the East and the West, but also attempts to introduce our listeners here at KZSU 90.1 FM to the wealth of music coming in from Lebanon. So if you like this kind of music, check them out. Mashrua Leila, M-A-S-H-R-O-U, and then an apostrophe, which I'm not sure would be sufficient to to, well, substitute for the a letter that doesn't exist in English. That's the letter Ain. And Leila, L-E-I-L-A. They do have a website. They are on Facebook. They are on MySpace. So check them out if you're interested in this kind of music. Certainly a band of young musicians from Beirut, Lebanon, who are making it big in the alternative music scene. They are not one of those mainstream acts and music musicians or singers who you might have heard about from the Middle East, because they're not backed by a very major commercial record company. Instead, they are devoting their time to making great music. They've got two albums out. The song we just heard, Shimmel Yasmini, was from the first album. They have another one that was just released, an EP, and that album was released this summer, called El Hal Romansi, translated as The Solution is Romance. But I do want to go back to and a little bit to the interview with Hamid Sinno, who continues to speak about the track that you just heard. The track you just heard, Shimmel Yasmini, though you may not have understood the meaning of the words in Arabic, I'm sure you were able to decipher the pain of the singer who wrote the song himself. He wrote the words and he the lyrics, and apparently they had a very big significance in his life. Hamid Sinno agreed to discuss that significance with me back in the last summer when I interviewed him in Beirut, Lebanon. And so we'll continue with my interview with Hamid Sinno right here on KZSU 90.1 FM. This interview was recorded in Beirut in the summer of 2011. You'll even be able to hear the Mediterranean waves crashing in the distance as Hamid attempts to talk about his own life a little bit, his life in music, his career in music, his musical choices, and some of his personal choices as well, choices that in many ways affected the creation of the song Shimmel Yasmini.
But it's a lot more basic because I wrote it, not like...
you can feel the pain in the song.
Thank you, I guess.
Which makes everybody want to ask the question I hate to ask, which is it based on...
A true story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you want to expand on it, but I've been reading logs everywhere. There has been everything from betrayals to... marital affairs.
Yeah, I read the marital affairs thing online. I won't lie to you.
We don't have to give too much detail, but does that
there was no marriage. There was a relationship with someone my age, who was either intentionally or you know, as the product of context, was very hurtful. And I, you know, it was the first time I really fell in love. And
but the words are really humiliated,
shameful,
jilted, pained lover, and they seem to address another male.
Yeah, they do.
Which in some ways is not uncommon in Arabic music, where you have sort of your address
but that's
the beloved in you know, masculine terms, sort of maybe to elevate the status.
But that's why we played with the gender of the vocalist.
But
of,
this was
of the
deliberate.
Narrator.
This
yeah.
was not.
No,
like
no, it wasn't.
Habibi means could mean anything.
No, I think I was more than obvious about trying to make it that. I was also, I mean, at the time when I was writing the song, I was reading Brian Whitaker's Unspeakable Love. My opinions on that, I'll keep to myself as slightly inconsequential at this point. But I thought it was fascinating when he spoke about regional portrayal of homosexuality in popular culture. That I thought was extremely problematic, is that it always is, you know, dubbed with shame, and there's this public shame that happens with choosing to waver masculinity that I thought was fascinating, and that I wanted to put in song because I didn't really find it shameful. I'm guessing a big part of the power of that song is that for a lot of people, I think what it created was something, a bit of a conflict of interests. I mean, I didn't do this intentionally, so I don't necessarily think it's whatever. I think for a lot of people what happened is they were conflicted about either feeling like they were listening to something that they should, you know, judge, and then at the same time that it was situated, you know, as a very personal experience with a lot of emotion and sentiment, makes it a bit too human to actually, you know, frown upon.
And the reaction to that song specifically
has been beautiful.
Beautiful. So define beautiful for us, because that's not really what I've read. I mean, I've read
define beautiful
saying
for you.
It's beautiful.
I mean, define okay,
what you
basically
mean by beautiful. Are you aware of the kind of?
I mean, you know what?
When
some
blogger,
whatever conservative douche is gonna like bring up morality and tradition and who we are as Arabs and you know, create such a big ethical question over someone just saying, you know, singing about being in love with another man, then I think it sort of sheds light on so much. That's what I mean by beautiful. Then
okay, then
I think, I mean, there was this part in this interview that Michel Foucault gave once on friendship, and he said this thing that was actually rather emotional and extremely uncharacteristic of him, but where he suggested that what it was about homosexuality that people had such a problem with wasn't the actual sexual act. It was the idea of being able to conceive of different... Wait, hold on, sorry for that to pass.
An airplane over Beirut.
It was that people can begin to conceive of different networking, different camaraderie, something that can completely shake the very foundations on which contemporary heteronormative society is, you know, built. So for me, when something like a song becomes a moral polemic, I mean, I think that's great. I think it's a lot more than I was looking for.
I mean, I've read things like it's a gay anthem for Arab marginalized sexualities, down to the whole Mashrua Layla project is out to make everybody gay. All the members are,
yeah, it's true. We have
and
we all worship all Satan backstage and sleep with each other.
But it is, sir, the discourse is happening. All over. It's still happening. I checked the blogs this morning. There were quite a few opinions out there. Are you feeling personally...
I mean, I think it's really funny that I am in a position where I'm, you know, publicly being recognized as my sexuality and my gender instead of my music. I find that rather troubling. You know, I'm also a musician. There's also stylistic and aesthetic and intellectual input that's going into these things. It's not, you know, hey, homo.
Like, yeah.
There's so much more. I think it's extremely simplistic and shallow when people reduce it to some surface judgment of someone's sexuality. So, yeah, I find that extremely bothersome, but otherwise...
Well, I mean, granted, that was not the point when you recorded or released that song. But isn't that indicative of the fact that there are, at least all over the Arab world, this yearning to find that anthem? And they seem to have found it in that song.
You know what? I mean, if that's the case, then great. But it's definitely not something I'm looking for. I don't think I'm the kind of person who could handle the responsibility of trying to speak for a social bracket. Doesn't have to be my job. I don't want it to be my job either. If people can identify to the music, then great. That makes me so happy. It's ridiculous, because that's exactly what music means to me. But otherwise, no. It's really not my intention to. Like, I'm venting.
I mean,
there's a lot of research that goes into what we write about and how we do it. But at the same time, there's still a lot of. I mean, I can't get over my own narcissisms and my melodrama and feeling like anyone should actually care about that. That's also a big part of how we write.
And absolutely. And we don't want to take the light away from the fact that the music and the first album is really, the music is so interesting and so different.
The guys
than
are incredible.
To produce. And then you went on from that to release the Clint Eastwood Arab size version. We're calling it Clint Middle Eastwood.
I mean, we didn't really name it that, but some blogger
then young one off the correct.
Yeah.
And that sort of was seen as the single follow up to the album.
I mean, we have an EP coming out in less than a month. That's our follow up to the album, but you know, Ghadan Yawman Afdal isn't even on there. It was something that we just did for Biblos, because, I mean, the Gorillaz were playing there and we love them. So we thought it'd be cool to play a tribute.
Yeah. I remember playing both songs to both versions in my class, and
people sort of really identifying with the Arabic version in a way that was not like it's the copy or the inferior. It was inspired.
No, I mean, we changed it. Yeah, it was obviously based on the song, but I mean, the entire rap part is completely changed. The music is rather different.
Was it envisioned in support of the Egyptian revolution, the Tunisian revolution, or
no.
Is that an afterthought?
Like I told you, we wrote it last July, which was before anything explicit started happening in Egypt. I mean, things have been bubbling there for years, but nothing had really, really, really... The revolution hadn't formally started, I guess. And then by the time it was done, like by the time we finished recording it and our video editor was done editing the different footage she had, the revolution had started in Egypt, and actually Haig thought it was relevant. It was,
right, because the beginning of the video does actually mention that.
Yeah, he put a tag on it, actually.
Right.
Because I think we're all so shaken by what just happened in Cairo.
Well, and the title itself, Tomorrow is a Better Day, seems to
There are things in the lyrics that are actually, that would actually be problematic in light of the revolution. So, I mean, that's why, like I told you, we weren't intentionally trying to address the revolution at the beginning. It was, we had a video that we were going to put out, and we were all very, very, very moved by what was happening in Cairo, and I felt it was a good idea to just...
And
give them that.
The EP is coming out soon.
July 29.
Anything you can tell us what to expect? Or you want to surprise everybody?
I mean, we left our old producers, and we did our own recording and production on things. So there are certain things about the sound that are so much stronger, we feel, than they were about the first album. And there are certain things about the new recordings as well that are a lot weaker. Like the vocals, in general, are not as well recorded as they were on the first album. But everything else is grand and layered and very well studied. And I mean, all the new tracks are less about Beirut and society, and they're a lot more intimate and personal, or at least trying to be. And the music, I mean, the guys are starting to get to a place, I feel, all of us musically, where it's less about us being in workshop mode, where we just walk in and we each, play our big solo or have little parts at the end. We're actually a lot more concerned with composition and working with each other. So I think the music is a lot better, laced together.
So do you have a date for the potential release?
Yeah, July 29.
July 29, 2019.
That's when it goes out.
Okay.
It should be on iTunes then as well.
And we will be spinning it on KZSU, definitely.
Lovely.
And in the works, Hamid, you mentioned a few upcoming concerts. Yep. Nothing in the States yet.
Nothing in the States. Oh, actually, we're going to Canada. We're going to Montreal in September, I think, and we just spoke to a bunch of people in New York who were interested in getting us. But, I mean, nothing's been finalized, but...
Well, I would say it on there that we're working to get you to Stanford and
I hope so.
Get you a sort of a well-deserved welcome to your reception.
I hope so.
Thank you. With the hope that it's kind of pulled you into the college radio and crowd, and then into college concerts.
That's extremely kind of you.
But you're going to, I hear, to Serbia?
Yeah, we're playing at the Exit Festival, which is a big honor for us. I think we're the first regional band to play there. The lineup is phenomenal. I mean, they're people I grew up, worshipping and still worship. So we're all very excited about it.
And the date for that is?
We're playing on the 9th of July, but the festival goes on from the 7th to the 11th of July.
So if anybody's in...
If you're in Serbia, come out to the Suba stage on the 9th of July.
On the 9th of July, 2011. And parting words to your faithful listeners? Now, I have to admit, there's a bias in the Arabic classes for some reason at Stanford.
I'll hold you completely responsible for that one.
Yes, I mean, guilty as charged, but honestly, I mean, I play, what I like, and then it's the students who either pick up on it or don't, and they've picked up on this. So is there a special message to the... I think we have about 240 Arabic students who wanted to kind of put together a video tribute to you guys. That's still
that's
in the
really kind of
I'm allowed to say it. But is there anything you'd like to say to them in parting and to KZSU in general?
I guess thank you so much for listening to us. And we're honored to have people who care about our music all the way in Stanford. guess that's it.
Okay.
I have no idea what to say without sounding like
a giant
ball of cheese. But
thank you, Hamid. We really enjoyed the interview.
Thank you, Ramzi.
And enjoy Serbia, and we get to see you at Stanford.
Inshallah.
صباح الخروف قسم وزع الجيري.